Welcome
Love
to
Talk Radio.
Is that crackling in the background to you?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, thank you for everyone showing up to the show tonight. Today we're going to be talking with Chris Melicon. I just noticed that we had some technical difficulties, so let me see if I can reset this and then we'll start. Hold on, Destiny, okay. can you try calling in again?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it was her phone.
All right.
Yeah. All right, to start off the show tonight, I'm going to have Destiny call back in and then we'll start it, but so Chris, now I'm going to start a new segment tonight, and I know Destiny and I talked about this. Every show we're gonna start off a segment called Weird Florida, and basically what we do is we find an article about weird things that happened in Florida. So
all right,
tonight's article is about hologram wielding intruders who abducted a woman that a man claims is what happened to his wife, and that's what he told the police. So. Hold on, let me go to Destiny. Now we can start the show. Hello, Destiny. Destiny, there? Hello, Destiny? Okay. Are you there, Destiny? Okay. Well, I'm going to start the show, and once she figures out what's going on with her phone. So basically, what happened was a man had basically claimed that hologram-wielding intruders had abducted his wife, and they used hologram to project signals on the wall to get them to do what they wanted him to do, according to the report. Oh, there she is. Hey, Destiny, you there?
Hello.
All right, there you go.
Yeah.
So, basically, in this report, once this happened, I guess it's so bizarre, because I guess, like, the woman in question, I guess, told him that she was with the mobile in a mobile home with the man's aunt. And I guess, apparently, the police found out he was on meth. So the police find out that the guy was, like, was tripping out. And there's a later report that states that the man was wielding a gun while his wife was searching for gold in the driveway. Man, that's some trippy
stuff. That
I love that. That's just so funny.
Yeah,
only
I mean, that's the next Hollywood movie right there.
Right.
Yeah.
Can you believe that?
Oh, I had
alcohol during wielding intruders in my house, man. Whew. All right, to start the show off, Chris, you had some things coming up, things in Louisiana happening. Do you want to start talking about that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's just tons of stuff going on.
Awesome.
There's so much stuff going on, I don't even know where to start. Our last investigation was at Fort Jackson.
Right.
The place is just breathtaking, you know. We asked to come and investigate it, and the fort has been closed due to damages by the last hurricane, which was Hurricane Isaac. The president there, Billy Nunsacker, Nungesser, they did all this stuff to rebuild this fort. And after Katrina, and then right after Katrina, Isaac came and just put it all underneath the water. And you could see the lines in the bricks. I mean, it was just, the place had just been hit, you know.
Yeah.
Investigating was amazing. You know, I first want to talk about just how the parish welcomed us in. You know, we asked to come and investigate, and they warned us, look, it's closed, it's muggy, we got all these plans, to fix it and everything like that, and they assigned us a guy named James Medea, and this guy is awesome. Let me tell you what, I mean, he's just, having him give us a tour of the fort, and actually, the way he talks about it, the way he presented it, and the way he treated us, it really inspired us to want to investigate even harder and wanted to, because you can really see the passion that this guy had for this place, you know. And even when he talked about, he was telling me how right after Katrina he came in and they had the little museum part of the fort where they had all these artifacts that they had found over the years, these historical documents. And, mm-hmm. and watching him tell us the story how he had to come in and shovel up through all the mud and yuck all these artifacts, you can see how much, it affected him.
Right.
And then also, the passion he has about, reopening it, getting it back on its feet. The people down there are just like, are considered New Orleans to me, because after Katrina, they were affected, just as much as we were. And, mm-hmm. And they keep getting knocked down, when they come right back up. That guy James right there is really awesome. It's just great, great to have people like that, around. It really inspires you. Billy Nungesser, the president there, he presented me with a key to the city, he gave us all gift bags, anytime we want to investigate, we can come down. He's all about the tourism, he's all about bringing people down there, because it's not just the fort, it's the history, that you can just tell that the president loves, and, they love their parish. So, I mean, I can't say enough about those guys down there and what they're doing, If I was a leader, in a community, I would want to be like those men, So with that, the history of the fort is amazing, It was part of the Battle of Forts because it sits on the Mississippi River. And one side you got Fort Jackson, which is on the west bank, and the other side you have St. Philip, which is on the east bank. And it's right at the mouth, about 30 miles after you get into the mouth of the Mississippi from the Gulf. And the Union soldiers used to try and sail their ships up there because that's the only way to get to New Orleans. If you get past that point, then you pretty much got New Orleans in the Civil War. And New Orleans was a huge accomplishment for them to get. And they would just pound them with these cannonballs, you know. And back in April 16th to April 28th in 1862, during the Civil War, the Union fleet bombarded Fort Jackson and Fort St. Philip, and they got past the guns, and they were actually able to take over New Orleans. So there was a lot of that's when there's actually a mutiny there in the fort. Okay, I don't know too much details, but there's actually a mutiny there for the Southern Confederates.
Right. Hold on,
but investigating the fort, it was just crazy because just to see how the soldiers lived. I mean, it's all brick, you know. I mean, you just really have to be there, and it's all brick. And just to know, like, in the South, humid. You guys are in Florida, you know. Y'all already know. I mean, it's just imagine being just a brick room, you know, and that's where you live, you know. So
it's
pretty amazing, surreal to be there. You know, it's even kind of breathtaking to even talk about.
Right. Well, how long did it take the Union soldiers to take New Orleans?
I think it was 12 days. It was 12 days, I believe. It took them to get past it took them to get the fort 12 days. And then they got past that and went and got New Orleans. So pretty much
right.
New Orleans was pretty much easy game after those two forts were taken over.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure New Orleans was a huge, I'm sure that was kind of the heart of the, you know, trying to, you know, manufacture goods and weaponry, you know, up the Mississippi River to, you know, other Confederate soldiers. So I'm sure that was a huge loss to the Confederates.
Yeah, think about it. It was in 1862 that this happened, and the war didn't end in, what, 1865? So, I mean,
yeah.
3 years there. The war continued. So, I mean, you know, it's pretty amazing how that kind of took place. But the evidence, I mean, when we investigated, we brought Jeremy in from Ghost Quest Paranormal and his team. At the time, when you're investigating, it's always different from when you go back and review. And I haven't had much time to review, but what little footage I've been able to go over, we got some pretty great things, you know. We ran the Echo Box, and I don't know if y'all know what the Echo Box is, but it's actually a software program that you can download off the Android or iTunes. And what it does is it uses different broken up syllables and broken up sounds with white noise and your echo voice. And the theory is that spirits can manipulate all those together to form words and communicate back to you. We've had some amazing results with it. I've tried to debunk this thing, Chris, left and right. I've tried everything in the world to debunk this thing, and I just can't. You know, I'm waiting for somebody to come out there and say, well, here's a logical explanation for this, and it just hasn't happened yet. But apparently from what we got, my team doing a small little session in one of the tunnels got a woman, possibly the name of Marcia, who died of scarlet fever, and she was a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, apparently that's one of the things. We got a lot, you know, them telling us to leave, you know, but we're actually going back next Friday. So 7 days from today, we're going back there, and we're going to be conducting another investigation.
Right. So
cool.
What's the location of Fort Jackson to New Orleans?
70 miles south of us.
So that would be like Plaquemines Parish?
Yeah, that's Plaquemines Parish. And that's
okay.
Who actually owns the fort, the Plaquemines Parish.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, their president is Billy
Nunsucker.
Nungester.
I thought Plaquemines Parish, I remember, like, I mean, how bad was it flooded from that hurricane?
Pretty bad. I mean, I don't know the details. I just know that... How many feet was this under? I mean, it was flooded. It was underneath water for like up to 6 weeks. You know, all the historic exhibits in the fort were destroyed. It suffered so many structural damage. You know, as James was leading us around, he was showing us, like, look, be careful here, you know, because when you look over, there's brick over you, and it's only a couple feet above your head. And you can see, like, in between the brick, the concrete is gone. There's nothing there. Some of the bricks literally look like there's nothing holding them there. Like, any minute, it can fall on your head. And plus, you guys, we're walking around in the pitch dark, you know. It's funny because John and I were walking down here. He's like, turn your flashlight off. I'm like, I'm not turning my flashlight off. It's pitch dark down here. We're in this fort that's about to break, you know, and it's about to be spring. The snake's about to be out. No way, you know. So, but, yeah, man, it's really dangerous walking around there, you know. But, you know, that's we put ourselves in that type of situation all the time, you know, looking for paranormal activity.
Yeah. Now, was Fort Jackson used in the Trail of Tears in transporting Indians to Oklahoma?
No, I do not know that. I do not know.
Because I know that.
I know it was involved in the Spanish-American War. I don't know anything about it being used for that. No, I've never heard anything about that.
All right, because I know Yeah, I know that New Orleans was used as one of the transportation centers for the Indian removal. They would send the Seminoles up from Florida into the New Orleans, and then they would send some of the people from Georgia into New Orleans, and then they would send them there, and then from New Orleans they would go into Oklahoma.
Yeah, that's crazy. Makes sense.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, because I forgot what port they left from. It was like, I want to say Pensacola. From Pensacola, they put them on a boat to New Orleans, and then, you know, shipped them to New Orleans, and then from New Orleans they sent them to Oklahoma. I know that a lot of the Seminoles, you know, were sent that way. That was one of the ways that they were sent out, from what I read. You know, I mean, I wasn't sure as far as, like, any kind of Native American history that you have in New Orleans. I mean, do you have any of that?
Not really that I know of, you know. I'd have to do some research for you to see. But, you know, in the city itself, not much of the Indians, because it was already established way back by it was already established by the France, you know. Napoleon had took it over, and then you had so many different other cultures in there, the Irish, the Italian, all these different cultures in New Orleans. So I'm sure there might have been some Indians, but Indians were mainly excluded in outside of New Orleans. That's where a lot of Indians were, and there was some one about the Houma Indians. They were actually Indians that had their own name, but I don't think anybody gave them a name when they came, and they were pushed out of Houma, and they were just called the Houma Indians.
Okay, it's so like Houma, Oklahoma. Houma, Louisiana. Okay. I see. All right, yeah. You know, when you investigate, you know, Fort Jackson, I mean, what kind of feelings do you get as far as, like, investigating there? I mean, do you feel, like, nervous or, you know, excited? I mean, like, do you get mixed feelings?
Well, extremely excited, you know. I mean, like I said, the guy James Madej was so awesome there. He just made us really feel at home, you know. After 10 minutes of being there with him and talking to him and just getting with his personality, it was just kind of like we could be ourselves. So we were kind of ourselves, and, you know, like, about an hour into it, I was like, well, I wonder if, like, you know, he's going to be like, you guys are ridiculous, you know, because we were just kind of opened up. We were being ourselves. We got it all on footage. You got a lot of it on footage, like how, you know, Jeremy's team and my team interact with one another, you know, and just how we were, you know. So, I just say, because the way James's attitude and personality was, we kind of just really felt at home, felt very comfortable there. At first, when it got dark and we started the initial investigation, kind of a really creepy feeling, you know. being there. Now, there was a couple of times in that night that I felt maybe something was there, maybe not. Again, you know, I'm not empathic, I'm not a sensitive, I'm not a psychic or anything like that, but I do know when my equipment starts going off and you can feel the atmosphere in the room, you know, change, that you don't have to be any of those things to know something's there with you. You know what I mean?
So yeah.
It was probably once or twice during the night. We felt like that happened. We felt like it was a pretty quiet night, you know. We weren't let down, but, I mean, it's just the mistakes that I always make, and this is for me, is that I set the bar so high for these historical places, you know, these known haunted places, because they're telling you the stories and they're telling you the claims, and I'm just like, yes, okay, this is going to happen, you know. I'm going to, you know, tonight I'm going to prove the existence of ghosts. Watch this. You know? And then when it goes in there, that really doesn't happen. And it's just kind of like, oh, you know, but that's all mentally for me. You know, I love the Echo Box, and the Echo Box produces so much. I think the Echo Box is so before its time that I could not be getting any activity at all. And I could turn on the Echo Box and sit there and have it. Pretty much have a conversation with the spirit. I don't know if you guys have messed with that yet, but you need to.
Groundbreaking stuff.
Yeah, but see, like when the Echo Box is going, I want the Echo Box to be hitting, you know, direct responses, and I also want the REM pod to be going off. I also want my mail meter to be going off. I also want my periscope to be going off. You know, I want, you know, all these other intelligent responses, but it's so hard to get, you know? But, you know, unfortunately that night we didn't get that kind of activity. But definitely, you know, it's something there. Yeah, I think something's definitely there. I think a lot of residual energy's there, because some of the claims that James was telling me was that when you look down, when you walk into, they got these tunnels. So, like, let's say, I wish I could show y'all, describe this.
Tunnel.
You know, when you walk down into the fort, okay, you have these different tunnel openings, like sections, from left to right,
okay,
and there's probably like 8 of them right there when you walk in, and you walk into those tunnels, and you look down, when you turn to your right, you look down all these tunnels, each one of those sections has a window there pointing out towards the Mississippi River where they used to set the cannon balls, I mean the cannon dead, all right, and so someone said that they were in those tunnels, and they looked down, and they looked down one of the sections where they used to have the cannon, and they saw a man walk straight up and put his hand on his shoulder, and a can of fire go off, and smoke go up, and then all of a sudden it disappeared. You know, that tells me right there that's residual energy. I mean, I believe that 100%. You know, would there be some residual energy there? Yeah, sure. I think there's a couple of intelligent spirits there, especially the one we communicated through the Echo Box. Another claim that James had told me about was that he was working in one of the rooms, and someone kept saying they saw a figure in the first tunnel. And when they came out, he could have swore he saw something there, and it looked like a man holding some bricks. Because that's what they used to do. They have all the, you know, back in the day, they used to build it with bricks, so they have all these bricks that they carry around, you know.
Right.
And you know, that was one of his experiences that he told me about, you know. And so I think that's a lot of residual energy. I think if somebody just posts up there one winter for about a week, okay, and just stays on the fort for a week, and, you know, gets a tent, you know, and just stays there and does research there, I bet you they can pick up some great paranormal activity on the residual side.
I mean,
I was reading on your
Destiny. Go ahead.
On your Lady in Black case, I was wanting to know more about that.
What's that?
The Lady in Black case.
The Lady in Black. You know, that case got kind of famous, and I didn't even realize it. You know, I had a couple of articles written about that case, and yeah, well, that was an abandoned house that somebody owned out in Hammond, Louisiana. And we went out there, and I'm trying to remember, it was last year. There was a woman, supposedly a spirit woman, that was dragged people out of their beds. I think one claim was that guy or a female screamed at the woman to go away when she appeared one night, and the glass behind them broke. So when we went in there, it was we got some evidence. I'm not gonna lie, you know, we got some evidence. I kind of got bashed on the internet for how I behaved on that case, and I'd like to explain myself a little bit. Well, when we moved from one room to the other, we had a red pot and had our case who sitting down on a piece of stool in the kitchen. We came from the utility room and into the kitchen, and you know, and John, it was crazy because John was like, I got a feeling. Watch this. Watch it's about to go off. And all of a sudden, it goes off. Both the K2 and the REM pod go off at the same time. But all of a sudden, through my spirit box and my speaker, I was getting this bump, 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 bump noise like this. There's something I never heard before. And, you know, I knew whatever was there was kind of negative. The claims were negative. You kind of got that negative feeling, you know. And sometimes I wouldn't call it provoking. I would call attempting to get, you know, evidence. I just said, hey, what are you doing to my stuff? You don't have to pay for this. I do. Because I look at this as that spirit's human too, okay? And if the human being was messing with my equipment the way I didn't like it, I'd tell them about it straight up. So that's what I did with the spirit. I said, look, you don't have to pay for this equipment. I do. And then all of a sudden, that's when, like, all hell broke loose. I mean, just the REM pod went off, the K2 went off, my spirit box went nuts, almost zapped out. I mean, I literally felt like my speaker was about to bust in my spirit box. It was just, and we had it on AMD too, and it was just like blah, 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 blah. So that was some pretty good activity there. And what else? Is there any other questions?
Yeah, Chris, what's up with the pictures of the trigger objects, man? You got like stuffed animals, man. What's up with that?
Oh, that's Kevin, man. That's Kevin, man. That's my partner, Kevin Betzer from Deep South Paranormal.
Yeah, what is up with stuffed animals? That's just weird, man.
Hey, man, look, if they told me jumping off, like, skydiving off the OKC would get me some paranormal evidence, you might see me up there with a parachute, bro, okay?
Yeah, I mean, what is the whole purpose of, like, putting a stuffed animal in a case in the middle of the room? I mean, like, if I'm a ghost, I'll be like, what the hell, man?
What if you're a child ghost that likes teddy bears?
That's true. That's true.
Maybe I am very on the fence about the whole child spirit thing.
Oh, really?
I am.
Yeah, you gotta check out my YouTube channel then. If you know about the Lady in Black, do you know about the basement and one of our videos titled "Proof There's Ghosts in New Orleans"? Or how is it? I forgot how I titled it.
Yeah,
talking weird tonight. I'm not thinking right. But yeah, I've ran into a few children's spirits, and I've got more evidence of children's spirits than I have of regular spirits. And children ghosts exist. I believe that 100%.
They do, and I do fully believe that I've investigated many of them.
I run into more children than I do regular spirits.
Well, it's just anytime I've done an investigation where there's supposed children spirits involved, there's usually a dark entity in it. And
so you're saying we're getting into demons now, Destiny?
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Okay, well... I mean, all right, you got two things here, okay? You got the demon, all right, pretending or trying to be a child and acting like that. Okay, I can kind of go with that, you know, like maybe, you know, that's a good theory, you know, but, I mean, there's no way. I've investigated this place. I'm going back there tomorrow night, actually. I've investigated this place probably like 8 times, and I've ran into the same child spirit every single time. And do I think she's a demon? No. I don't think she's a demon. I think she was a lost child, you know, stuck somewhere. And, yeah, that's what I think.
Well, not necessarily.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Very rarely, because people have this misconception in their head because all the shows and stuff, like you're going to get a lot of demonic cases when you go out and stuff, and that's not even it at all. Because I probably can't even count on one hand how many, you know, really dark cases I've had. It's just the ones that I did have, there was child mimicking. And then I've been on other cases where there was no, you know, dark entity and it was a child. I guess it's just a taboo thing in my head, like why would a children, why would a child be earthbound?
I think a child would be more confused than an adult. You know, imagine a six-year-old child dying. She doesn't know about God, religion, all that stuff. I mean, she doesn't even know about life. Imagine how. Imagine if you're, you know, if you're 6 years old and you die, and all of a sudden you're a spirit and you're conscious, and you're walking amongst us. You know, I mean, it's gonna be a very scary, very confusing kind of thing. I mean, I would think. You know, and you're right about that. You know, those cases, those dark, dark cases are very rare. You know, I've ran into one, and it's not something I even like talking about. You know, pretty scary stuff.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Chris, as far as Fort Jackson goes, I mean, what would you say was some of the, you know, experiences that you had that, you know, you found that probably the most memorable for you?
Well, the most memorable was probably when we were in the jail cell, and we had one of the Ghost Quest para members in there. He was a guest investigator. I think his name was Frank. And we had my new investigator, Liz, in there. We had Andrew from Ghost Quest para in there, myself, and Jeremy. And Jeremy was filming. All of a sudden, you caught the atmosphere change. We're starting to get echo box hits. I walk out of the room, and I think I go to talk to somebody across the fort or something. And all of a sudden, the K2 meter starts spiking. They start getting intelligent responses. That was a pretty memorable moment in there. The other memorable moment was having that spirit box session. Echo box session that we had in the what do they call it? Fire pit room. I might have that wrong. James is listening. I'm sorry. Well, what they used to do, they had this one room, okay, and it was like a fireplace-looking thing in there, okay? And what they used to do, they used to take these cannonballs and they used to put them in this fireplace and they used to make them red, red hot. Then they would transport them all the way over to the cannons and they would shoot that at the ships. That way, when they hit the ships, it would catch fire. And, you know, John and I were sitting down talking the other night about it, and John was just like, you know, it just amazes me how people lived back then. Because we were talking about how they transport the cannonballs hot like that and how they would do it and the kind of conditions they lived in. It just, when you're walking around there, the most surreal thing is that, you know, life back then must have been very, very tough. It makes you really appreciate, you know, my cell phone, my air conditioning, you know, my refrigerator. You know, things that we take for granted every day, back then they didn't have that stuff. You know, and then next thing you know, you're out of fort and you're worried about getting pounded on from ships coming up the Mississippi River. You know, you got loved ones there. I was talking to James earlier, and because I had asked him, I was like, well, we got this woman that came through the Echo Box, you know, and can you kind of explain it? And he was like, yeah. He said, for scarlet fever, yellow fever, cholera fever, all that happened back then. You know, the fort was like a place where, you know, families lived at. It was like a army base, you know. You had kids, you had family there, you had women, you had nurses, you had soldiers. All these people lived there, you know, and I was just thinking, like, man, you know, it's like they lived that way and we lived this way. You know, how good do we actually have it? You know what I'm saying? I was like,
yeah.
We got it pretty good, you know, and like John and I really like, it was really, you know, gratifying knowing that, you know, wow. That's probably one of the most memorable things I took away from that is just the surreal feeling of, you know, this is how people live, you know. And this is because you're kind of putting yourself in history when you're investigating there because you're in there. You feel it. And I can't describe it, you know.
Now, did the Spanish ever invade New Orleans?
No, I don't believe so.
Okay, so they never tried to invade.
I'm not big on history. You know, there's a couple of teams out there that you know, I'm big on catching evidence.
Wasn't New Orleans founded on fur trading?
What's that?
I could have sworn it was. I said I could have sworn New Orleans was based on fur trading.
I think it was at one point, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it's, what was the, you said there was another location that you guys went to. What was the name of it, Chris?
Well, that's the Gemini that we went and investigated.
Okay, the Gemini. Now, the Gemini, what was just the story behind the Gemini, Chris?
Okay, in 1973, it was a speakeasy for homosexuals. And they just got done with a, for homosexuals, a speakeasy. Like, you know, like how you go to an alley or something, you knock on the door and a little slide of the door come up and you tell them who you are and they let you in. Yeah, something, you know, kind of like that, you know.
It was for the persecution of gay people?
What was that?
Yeah.
The persecution of gay people?
No, it wasn't persecution. It was just where they hung out at.
Oh, okay. I thought that's where
you were. Yeah, speakeasy. You know what a speakeasy is, right?
No, I don't.
You know, it's where the during the Prohibition where they went and drank. So the law went up behind them.
Okay. Kind of like that. Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
It was a hangout. You know, it was a hangout. Well,
that
you know, they kind of...
double the brothel.
Okay.
Yeah, something like that. Well, that's apparently what they did on the third floor. The place is three stories. Right now, the bar is on the first floor. The second floor is where the fire broke out. Right now, that's where the manager's office is, and where they store their food and everything like that. The third floor is just completely abandoned, and then it has a third floor attic. What I'm about to tell you is it's really trippy. In 1973, apparently someone was kicked out that was partying there and got upset and poured gasoline on the staircase, going to the second floor, set fire to the whole place, and it killed 32 people. And you know, some people
I
just escape.
I remember hearing about that.
Yeah,
that was
yeah,
on my top places of tragic fires.
Mm-hmm. Ghost Hunters actually did an episode on it. They didn't find much, though. What happened was the marketing manager, Jonathan there, he was in the third floor attic doing something. And he discovered in the corner, he discovered a historical artifact. I believe it was a Civil War gun. So he started pulling up the boards up there and pulled out bones, Civil War's uniform, newspaper from 1860, little teacups he just found up there, little medallions. I mean, just all these historical artifacts. And the archaeology team from Tulane came in. They started, you know, taking up all kind of finding all kind of things, all in the third floor attic. And one day, mind you, that the third floor is completely abandoned. There's nothing up there. And one day, he was showing a medium around there because people like to come because of the fire, and you know they want to try to communicate with the souls and stuff. And all of a sudden, he was scratched in threes all the way down his arm. You know, and I know I say three, you know, everybody thinks, demonic. Not so much. I mean, just because you get scratched in three doesn't necessarily mean it's a demonic, you know. For a demonic, you have to have a series of symptoms to be diagnosed with demonic infestation or oppression, you know. So, but it was just that, all the way down his arm, from his back, on his shoulder, all the way down his arm. So he picked up the phone, he called Kevin. Kevin called me, we went in there and we investigated. Immediately off the back, we're getting K2 hits, we're getting activity, we're getting stuff rustling around. There's a lot of activity, you know. And kind of find out, I asked Jonathan, I said, when did this activity really start? He said, well, it started about a few weeks ago. And I was like, well, when did you start pulling stuff out the attic? And he said, about a month ago. I said, you don't think these two coincide? Because 90% of our cases are from people renovating. When people start renovating, all of a sudden that stirs up paranormal activity, you know. Why? There's a number of theories out there. I won't get into it. But that's, you know, that's why I think what happened. And so we came in, and we're getting intelligent K2 hits, but we're not getting anything consistent. We're staying focused on the fire, you know, of the people who died in the fire. We're not realizing that maybe there could be other souls there. So we pull out That's what we pull out. We pull out the Echo Box finally. Okay, and this is when the Echo Box sold me.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the attic. We're getting a couple of hits off the spirit box, and then we pull out the Echo Box. And come to find out, through this footage, that we found out that a woman scratched Jonathan. She did it because she wanted help, and she liked me, and she was sorry, and she promised she wouldn't do it again. I literally said, you know you can't go around scratching people, right? And she said, yes, I know. And that's, you know, and then I said, promise me that you won't scratch him again. And she says, I promise. And when I get home that night after this investigation, I have my folders and my hard drive on my camera, and it's A, B, C, or D, okay? Now, there won't a letter won't form unless something's been recorded in there. So A, B, C, and D, I have these files, and when I open up C, there's nothing in it. There's files in D, there's files in B, there's files in A. And the one we did the session on was gone. So that was a kicker. So we asked Kobach, you know, because we lost this evidence. We hyped this thing up because we got all this evidence there, and then we lost a lot of it. So we go back, and when we go back, I had this connection from first 10 minutes I walked in there, and this name popped in my head. And again, guys, I'm not empathic, I'm not sensitive, I'm not psychic, I'm none of these things. Purely, our team is mainly 95%, you know, scientific based with our instruments. That's why we spend all the money to buy new equipment. It's expensive. So all of a sudden I have this name in here, and then I'm going through the K2, and you know, I'm getting intelligent responses through the K2, and then we stop for a second, okay? Because I think everybody, including me on my team, has ADD, and if something happens, we get distracted. Then we go back to it, and we're asking, and I finally said a name. I say, is this Mary in the K2 spikes? And I said, are you trying to talk to me through my mind in the K2 spikes? And all of a sudden, we get some of the best hits that I've ever seen on the Echo Box that ever came through. You know, John was like, John's getting involved, and John's like, finish this nursery rhyme for me. And he says, Mary had a little, and then all of a sudden, this whisper, this female whisper, comes through the Echo Box and says, lamb. And then, you know, we get excited, and they say, what's this guy right here that just got excited? What's his name? And Chris comes through clear as day. I mean, we're just having a full conversation with this thing. And we found out it died of cholera fever and there. And, it, you know, of course, it was a woman. And my theory is, and I truly believe this 100%, is that back when the yellow fever and the cholera fevers broke out, you know, that epidemic, they used to put people in the attics to sweat it out because they felt that could cure them, you know, and a lot of them died. So we think that with all the items and artifacts that Jonathan had pulled out of the attic and from our paranormal evidence, that people were put in that attic to sweat out the fever, and they died up there. And that's what I believe that we are communicating with on the third floor. Not one person that died in the fire, we haven't communicated with anybody that died in the fire at all. I don't know why. I don't know. But that's just what we found with the Gemini.
So how do you feel about the vampire culture down there?
Well, I don't really feel about it at all. I mean, I haven't noticed any vampires. Nobody's trying to suck my blood. Yeah. I doubt anybody would. It just tastes McDonald's, you know. I don't know. I haven't ran into anybody in the vampire culture. You know, if they're down here, I respect them. And, you know, that's their thing. That's their thing. You know, New Orleans has a lot of different characters, you know. We're considered a character. You know, we're a paranormal group in New Orleans, and some people, you know, praise us, other people hate us, you know, and I'm sure it's the same thing for the vampire community. People praise them, people hate them, you know. I respect anybody who does what their heart tells them to do, unless
you know,
they're killing somebody, hurting somebody.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you that question. As far as, like, the vampire community in New Orleans and the paranormal community, do they ever kind of cross paths or work together in any way?
No.
No.
I've never
really
worked. I don't think, why would I work with a vampire community? I mean, unless they're a paranormal team and they're producing paranormal evidence or they got paranormal problems. But, I mean, what would they have to offer for paranormal side?
That's
true. You know, I mean, if they have expertise, yeah. Well, I mean, I'd
yeah.
love to hear. I'd love to talk
to them. I just wasn't sure if
you
guys ever, like, do a conference together, meet up, or because it's kind of...
it's a secret society, Chris. I can't
conference.
Talk about it, okay? I'm sworn with blood for silence, okay?
okay. You guys really don't work together. That's fine.
Actually, you know what? A black man did pull up 2 nights ago and then put a black bag over my head and brought me to the quarter and told me what I could say and what I couldn't say on your show, all right? That's a joke, all right? But, no, dude, I don't know about the vampire community down here. You know, I haven't crossed paths with them. And, you know, I respect any community down here as long as they're not trying to hurt somebody themselves, you know. Yeah, more power to them. Good job for doing what you love.
That's right. Okay. So, When are you going back to Fort Jackson or the Gemini?
7 days, man. Next week, going back to Fort Jackson. I go to Gemini all the time, man. I got a connection with that place, and a connection is a very powerful word for me. I can walk up to the third floor right now, and I could live there. I can tell you that right now. I have a very comforting, very special feeling at the Gemini. I was we were invited by the manager of the Gemini to the St. Joseph's Parade on St. Patrick's Day to throw beads out the third floor window.
Wow.
And I went up there, yeah, it was amazing. So much fun throwing the beads out the window to all the people. It was really great. I got a video of it on my Facebook. But something interesting that happened. You know, I can walk in the Gemini right now with my K2 meter, stand in the middle of the room, hold out a K2 meter and say, "Mary, can you come light up this device for me?" And the device will light up. I can bet you I can do that right now. You know, I've done it several times. I spent a lot of time down there. Good friends of mine over there. My best year lives across the street. You know, so But you know, something interesting that happened that Saturday when we're doing a parade, Jonathan walks out the room and goes to the other room. The same room, Quincy, where he was scratched at, and there's an old desk in there, and that desk was flipped over. And
wow.
He screams my name. He screams my name. Chris! This is really loud scream. And I go over there, and I look at him, and he's white as a ghost. I look at the desk, and I just start laughing. He goes, "It's not funny." I was like, it's freaking hilarious, man. I was like, "You didn't hear that flip over. I didn't hear that flip over." That was the crazy part about it, you know. Nobody heard it flip over, you know. So that was pretty cool.
Right. Can you talk a little bit about the Saint Germain House?
Saint Germain House. What would
the
you like to
know about
the one
with the bottles of wine and the blood in it?
The vampire house.
Yeah, the vampire house, man.
You know, Jeremy from Ghost Quest Paranormal investigated that.
Really, man? I'd love to have him on sometime to talk about that. Because I was really curious about that. I mean, what were some of the, you know, things going on there?
Well, he was known as Saint Germain. He was born in New Orleans, I think in the very early 1900s. One night, the police got a call from a woman screaming and shouting, stating that he tried to drink her blood. And, what was it? It's trying to drink her blood, and they went in to find him, and he was gone, and they looked at all the wine racks there, and apparently there was wine with blood mixed in, and he disappeared, the myth is that he's been seen throughout the time. So nobody knows where he, you know, so this is way back when, like in the 1690s. So,
yeah.
He was at a dinner party. I think Lord Byron was there. And he was talking about how he had been around the time that Jesus was crucified, and he was actually one of the guards who stabbed him with the spear. And he also got sent to jail. They thought that he was suspicious. They thought he was a spy. And he was just telling them a bunch of weird stuff while he was in jail, too. They finally let him out.
Yeah.
It's a lot of, you know, stories around St. Germain, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's folklore, you know. I mean, that's just folklore. I mean, I don't believe in that. I don't believe that he was a vampire. I mean, could he have been a great actor? You know, yeah. Could he have been lying to everybody and saying this stuff? Yeah, that's more believable than he was an actual vampire. You know, I just think people really want to believe in the folklore side of things. And,
you know,
I'm not as gullible, you know.
Yeah, in New Orleans, I know that they like to do that. They like to, you know, really draw upon that vampire, you know, aspect of New Orleans from the books of Anne Rice, which really kind of started for New Orleans. I mean, I know that a lot of people kind of like to use stories like that one, or, you know, the St. Germain story, or the coffin. How they brought
you're forgetting
the
very one incredible story is the story of Madame Mallory.
Yeah.
Oh, I love her.
Yeah. I got a shirt from my friends over at French Quarter Phantoms. It's the actual picture of her, a portrait of her. It's on the back. And it says, Madam Mistress of something. It's on the back. I don't know. I can't remember what it says.
Yeah.
But it's a really cool shirt. It's one of my favorite ones. I love wearing it. You know?
Yeah.
So, but you know, and the thing is, you know, man, that is like the whole, that place right there is the holy grail for paranormal investigators to investigate.
Yeah.
Not only is it the number one haunted place in New Orleans, it's on the top 10, and it's number one on the top 10, but nobody's ever investigated. Nobody's ever, no official team has ever been allowed to investigate it, and that really drives me insane. I mean, like, when I start talking about it with friends, I'll get upset. Because it's just like, come on, man. Why are you the number one on the list and nobody's ever investigated it? You know, that's just ridiculous, you know? Producer, I'm not going to say his name on the air, I found out bought it out of California. He's an Emmy Award-winning writer-producer. I emailed him and asked him, you know, because, you know, what else do I got to lose, you know?
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, he emailed him and asked him. I didn't get a reply. It would have been. I mean, somebody's going to investigate it one day. And I did have a friend who lives in Kansas now, and he told me back in the 80s he lived here, and he was able to break in one night back in his early days, back in the 80s, when he was young and dumb, he says, and they stayed the night there. He says you can hear chains dragging, you can hear hollering, and all that stuff. So, but here's the kicker, though. When she built that place on that property, and I don't have the time right in front of me, 18—I don't remember exactly when, but she only lived there 2 years before that fire happened.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, she lived there 2 years, and then that fire happened. I know it was something 18-something-2, and then 18-something-4 is when the fire happened, and she was ran out of there.
Wow. You know,
the
Chris,
the story has been, who knows, some people say that the story is a lie, that she just left, you know, and all there was a chain slave in the kitchen that used to like to try and run away, and that was it. There was nothing else that really happened there. People had gotten mad just because of that one slave, because he was respected, and the local community got really upset with her about that and tried to go after her.
Yeah.
And the story had just escalated over the years.
Yeah,
but,
Chris.
You know.
Chris, when you know, you talk to the people in New Orleans. I mean, how do they feel about the city being, you know, kind of people coming there for the vampires and the ghosts and all that? I mean, how do people there feel about that?
Well, wait a minute. Repeat your question. You're kind of breaking up an echo in there.
Okay, hold on. Let me wait. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. When you know, you talk to the people in New Orleans, and all the vampires and ghosts, spirits, and all that get kind of associated with the city. I mean, how do the locals feel about that? About people coming there for just that, or it being associated with that?
I mean, I think it depends on which locals you talk to. I think a lot of, you know, I don't think there's a majority of people who feel the same way. I just think it adds to the mystery of our city, which makes our city even better. There's no other city like us in the world. We're a different breed down here. You know what I mean? We have a certain culture that we're used to down here. Our city's exciting. Our city's great.
I bet you make a killing on tourism.
Yeah. Tourism is great. People come down here and they have a blast. I mean, if you go onto Facebook right now and you look up Urban Street, it's got a 5-star rating. You know, it's just not about Bourbon Street. It's about the whole French Quarter, you know what I'm saying? The atmosphere there. I think we're very friendly people down here. Yes, we have a lot of crime, but that's getting better. You know, we've been knocked around by hurricanes, you know, just like Plaquemines Parish. We're rebuilding. We're getting better, you know. Unfortunately, you know, and I don't care that people might think ill of me for saying this, but our leaders aren't the best in the world. They really let us down, you know, and I'm not the only one that thinks that. We're trying to do our best to get, you know, better leaders in here to take care of our city and to really know where the money's going, you know. But, you know, you could come down here to New Orleans and you could just have the best time in your life. Or if you're stupid and irresponsible, you can have the worst time of your life and you might not make it out. You know? But if you come down here, like, there's good, clean, responsible fun. We're just not about, you know, strip clubs and drinking down here. We're about the culture, the history, the paranormal, the people. You come down here, let's say, you know, wherever you live in the world, you come down here, you're going to experience things that you never experienced before, and you're going to love it. And that's why we're so popular. And that's why we're known for our tourism, because people come back. They come here, and, you know, and then they say, when they leave, they say, you know what, I'm going back, you know. So I consider us one of the greatest cities in the world.
Mm. What would you say is probably your favorite aspect of New Orleans?
My favorite aspect of New Orleans?
Yeah, I mean, what makes you, like, love the city so much?
That we're so freaking haunted. I love the people down here. You know, I got amazing friends down here. My family's down here. New Orleans is my home. I would never leave it. I was born here. Unfortunately, I wasn't raised here. I was raised up north a couple hundred miles. But I came back. You know, I guess the blood, you know, in me was called back here. And I'll die here. You know, I'm not going anywhere. I like to think I got one of the best paranormal teams in America, if not maybe the world. I think we produce some of the best evidence that's out there. You know, we have a great adventure, a great time doing it. We're like a family. The people that we meet along the way in the French Quarter and around New Orleans, Uptown, Garden District, you know, Mid-City, just some amazing, amazing people, you know. And I just don't think you're going to find that anywhere else, you know. Right. It's not just one thing about New Orleans that stands out that keeps me here. It's a lot of things, you know, that keep me here.
Right. I mean, Jesse, what are some things about New Orleans that interest you?
Do what?
What
that interests me?
About New Orleans that you like, yeah.
Well, of course, it's going to be cliche. It's going to be, you know, the voodoo and the vampirism aspect.
Yeah.
I really like the dark, macabre stories, like some of those houses. Not only do they have dark past, they're passionate. Like, there are a handful of houses that, you know, they were crimes of passion, you know, like lovers quarreling and stuff like that, and it's kind of romantic in a morbid kind of way.
Right. Well, we have about a minute left on the show. I just kind of want to wrap it up and just, you know, Chris, what is some you know, investigations you have coming up that, you know, you really want to let people know about?
Well, I mean, we got events coming up. You know, we got our Duff Green Mansion in Vicksburg, Mississippi that sold out. We're going to be investigating that with 20 lucky people. We got Andrew Jackson Ghost Hunt at the Andrew Jackson Hotel.
Right.
With the cast of Deep South Paranormal, Kevin Betzer,
wow,
Randy Hardy, and yes, Hart. We're having Hart come. It's going to be insane. We got 12 tickets left. You can get them now. You can bring a friend with that one ticket for an extra $50. You get to stay in the rooms. You get Cafe Du Monde breakfast. And yes, you get to investigate with the guys from Deep South Paranormal and yours truly, you know, and, it's going to be an amazing night, you know. Duff Green is going to be an amazing night. And we got some other events that are coming up. We got some other things coming up I can't talk about yet. I really tried, Chris. I really tried to announce this stuff. But you know what, man? They say, you know, there's actually a couple people out there that can actually control me a little bit, okay? So I can't, I can't really talk about it. But, you know, if you guys want to, hit us up on Facebook, ParanormalSocietyNewOrleans.com. That's our website, and you know you can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/ParanormalNola. Come check out our events. You will, you know, it's worth every penny. And, yeah, man, that's about it. You know, we're still doing residentials, and we stay busy.
All right. Thanks, Chris, for coming on tonight. You know, I appreciate you making the time
I want to make one more announcement real quick, if that's all right.
All right, man. That's fine.
Yeah. Plaquemines Parish Billy Nungesser is running for governor, which is the primary function of tourism. So when he's done with the tourism from, you know, Burris, Louisiana, and that parish, he's also going to do for the state. So just want to make that little announcement real quick.
That's great. I'm glad to hear that. All right. Have a great night, Chris, and thank you for coming on.
You too.
All right.
Have a great night,
take care.
All right, have a great night, guys, and join us next Friday on Paranormal Access Radio.